You will be my witnesses in Jerusalem, in Judea and Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. Those are the last words that Jesus spoke to his disciples, according to Luke. He had lots of things to say to them after the resurrection, opening the scriptures, telling them not to be afraid, promising them that they would not be left alone. But he ended with a charge. He ended by giving his followers an assignment. Be my witnesses, here in the city where you are, and in the surrounding region, and beyond. It is like the first agenda item on the first church council meeting ever, and it's a really big item. I mean, we are talking about a very small group of people here, and not particularly well-known or powerful ones at that. They are from Galilee, the rural area of towns and villages to the north. Probably most have never been beyond their home region before. Jesus himself largely taught and ministered in this area alone. And now they have been given a whopper of an assignment to be witnesses not just in their familiar neighborhood, but everywhere. I don't know how the women and men that made up Jesus' company heard that assignment they were given, but I know how I tend to hear a charge that seems overwhelmingly great and beyond my capabilities. I'm likely to do one of two things: shut down completely, or make a plan. Tell me I need to read Tolstoy's 1,000-page novel War and Peace by Tuesday, and I will probably shut down. I can't do it, I'll say to myself. There's no way. There is a chance that if you caught me in the right mood, I might like the challenge and try making a reading plan, see what I can cancel in my schedule, how I might divide the book into manageable-sized parts, see what guidance is out there for reading in a rush. But probably I would shut down. They can seem like the only options in the face of an enormous undertaking. But Jesus' followers don't do either one. They don't shut down, and they don't actually make a detailed plan for how they are going to share the good news with the whole world. Instead, they do something much more unusual and much more interesting. They wait. They wait for the Spirit to show up. And when it does, everything changes. Biblical scholar Matt Skinner titled his recent study on the book of Acts, Catching Up with the Spirit, which I think is a great summary of what this book is all about. Jesus' followers are given this huge assignment, but it turns out they're not really in charge. Their assignment isn't, in fact, to plan and muster forces and share the gospel all on their own. Their assignment is to catch up with the Spirit. God is already on the move, working in the hearts of people, orchestrating encounters, stretching the boundaries of what seems prudent or possible. The small group from the church, from which the church would grow, found themselves not in the lead, but behind a Spirit that always had more grace, more hope, more joy in mind than they imagined possible. The story of the book of Acts is quite simply the story of them trying to keep up. You can find this pattern in any number of encounters in the book of Acts, but nowhere more strikingly and beautifully than in the one that's before us today that Helen read for us just a few moments ago. It starts with the location. Philip gets this message that he is to go to the south, to the road that goes down from Jerusalem to Gaza. This is not exactly a logical place for going to meet people. Head south from Jerusalem toward Gaza, and you end up in the desert. It is a wilderness road, a lonely and desolate sort of place, but it is clear that this is right where the Spirit wants Philip to be, because no sooner has he arrived than he hears a rumbling in the distance. Somebody is indeed coming, and not just anyone. It is someone who will stretch Philip's imagination, and ours too, I hope, about who this gospel business is for. The traveler on the road is a fascinating and complex character. He's from Ethiopia, we are told, which was a long way from Galilee or Jerusalem. From Philip's perspective, it's sort of about as far as the known world stretches. He's wealthy, an official in the Ethiopian queen's court, and he is riding a chariot, which is sort of like the first century equivalent of a Ferrari. He's educated, reading to himself as he speeds along. He's likely Jewish, having traveled such a great distance to worship. And one more thing, he's a eunuch. It is one trait among many for this multifaceted character. But the fact that the story repeats it over and over, referring to him time and again, not as the official or as the Ethiopian, but as the eunuch, suggests that it's kind of the key feature in this story. Castrated males lived in what one commentator calls a precarious existence in the ancient world, neither fully masculine nor feminine in social or gender roles. While they sometimes held important positions, they were considered profoundly other and were regularly targets of ridicule, criticism, and anger. So this traveler on the road has a lot of things going for him. Wealth, power, learning, a nice ride, but he is still far from the center of things, a person kept at arm's length by society as a whole. "Go over to this chariot and join it," the Spirit says. "I am way ahead of you, Philip. Just try to keep up." So Philip huffs along and sort of shouts over the clatter of hoofs, "Do you understand what you're reading?" And I imagine he's more than a little relieved when the chariot stops and he's invited to get in. The traveler is working his way through Isaiah on the long ride back home, and the passage that he happens to be puzzling over is this: "Like a sheep he was led to the slaughter, and like a lamb silent before its shearer, so he does not open his mouth. In his humiliation, justice was denied him. Who can describe his generation? For his life is taken away from the earth." This is a passage that we know as part of one of the servant songs of Isaiah, these mysterious poems about God's servant who suffers unjustly and through whom God works healing. And the traveler's polite question can actually break your heart. "About whom, may I ask you, does the prophet say this? About himself or about someone else?" Of course, he might just not understand the passage, but he might be wondering something more besides. Like, might this somehow be about me? He knows a thing or two about humiliation and justice denied, after all. He knows a thing or two about being left out. In Old Testament law, eunuchs were kept out of the assembly. They were excluded from participation in community life. This suffering servant may have sounded more than a little familiar to the man traveling on that wilderness road. About whom does the prophet say this? About himself or about someone else? We do not know just how Philip responded. We don't get the words in Acts. We only hear that he began here and shared the good news of Jesus, who suffered injustice and humiliation at the hands of the powerful, who identifies with all who suffer, who embraces those who are left out or left behind, who brings healing and new life. We don't know just how Philip responded, only that by the time this encounter was finished, a person long excluded found himself welcomed and accepted and filled with joy. "I am way ahead of you, Philip," says the Spirit. "Just try to keep up with me." Some of you know that I was away at a clergy conference earlier this month. Pastors from international churches in Europe and the Middle East get together every year for a week of learning and sharing and offering mutual support. And this year we met in Spain. We spent last Sunday morning, just a week ago today, in a small congregation like ours, composed of people coming from all over the world. And I want to share a moment from that service with all of you. Before the prayers of the community, the pastor invited anyone who had a prayer request, either a thanksgiving or a concern, to come forward and share it. And several did step up. A young boy shared that it was his grandmother's birthday. A couple shared that their anniversary was coming up. and a young woman shared that she had come out to her parents just the week before. "You all know I had been nervous about this," she said. "It wasn't easy, but it went really well, and I know that my parents love me for who I am." The congregation burst into spontaneous applause. It was a lovely moment, but it wasn't over, because another young person then came forward and asked to speak. "I've never been here before. I don't know any of you," they said. "But it means so much to me to hear what I just heard. I haven't been to any church in 6 years because I was not accepted, but I can see that I'm welcome here." And the congregation burst into applause all over again, even bigger this time. You can't plan a moment like that. You can't orchestrate it. You can only welcome it and try to keep up with the Spirit. The church has such a long history of putting up barriers and guarding its fences, declaring who belongs and who doesn't, who's worthy and who is not. So many have been told they don't fit. And I wonder if part of the problem is that we think we are in charge. We think it is our job to set the boundaries, our job to determine who's in and who's out. But look back to Jesus' first followers and you get a very different picture. Left to their own devices, they might have planned a church that looked with like a very narrow profile, made up of people who looked like them and spoke like them and behaved like them. Instead, the Spirit took the lead, stretching their imaginations and leading them beyond their prejudices and limits into the wide open spaces of love. That is the sort of church I want to be a part of. One that is prepared to wait and see what God is up to. One that's ready to be challenged and broadened. One that is open to the ongoing work of the Spirit beyond our wildest dreams. To those who are joining the congregation today, we are so glad that you are here. We are so glad the Spirit has brought us together and that you are joining this common journey we share. There is no telling exactly where it will take us, only that we will be stretched and led forward into uncharted territory. Because, friends, the Spirit is already out ahead of us. It's our job to keep up. Thanks be to God. Amen.